Welcome to Write a Reply, the podcast where we guide students through the intricacies of international affairs, engage in thought-provoking debates, and explain how and why global news matters for youth.
In the first episode of Season 10, we'll introduce ourselves as the new co-hosts and introduce you to what's pressing in the world of global politics, trade, and international security. But don't worry, there's always good news, and we'll try to give you some of that at the end of this episode.
Write a Reply is an initiative of the Queen's International Affairs Association, so make sure to follow us at Write a Reply on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok.
Hi, my name is Sean. I am one of your co-hosts for the season of Write a Reply. I love all things competitive sports. I'm a third-year computer engineering major, and hopefully this will let me look at the topics we discuss with a bit more of a scientific and technical background.
Hi, I'm Charlotte, your other co-host this season. I'm a second-year global development major here at Queen's and a political science minor. I'm specifically interested in the social implications of international politics and political dynamics, and I'll be looking to add a more holistic view to our opinions and debates here this season. Now let's dive into the heart of today's episode. We'll be diving into the main takeaways and updates about rocky India-Canada relations, how the U.S. government narrowly avoided a national shutdown, and the latest insights of ongoing Ukraine-Russia war. In recent news, a complex and contentious situation between Canada and India has taken center stage and really captivated international attention. But it's not necessarily a good thing for Canada to finally be a major discussion point in international diplomacy. The story escalated on September 18th, 2023, when Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau dropped an absolute bombshell accusation alleging that agents of the Indian government were involved in the killing of a Sikh community leader named Hardeep Singh Najjar in British Columbia back in June. Now, who was Najjar? He was a Canadian citizen originally from the Punjab state of India and had been a prominent figure in BC, known for his support of Sikh self-determination and independence for Indian-occupied Punjab. Now, the Indian government labeled his activism for Punjab independence as terrorism and accused Canada of harboring Sikh extremists. However, it's important to note that these charges didn't reflect the goals of locals in Punjab who've largely resigned to Indian sovereignty after violent protests of the 1980s.
It's important to mention in the 1980s, there was a different incident that may have sparked some controversy between Canada and India back then. This would be the Air India attack, which was where some Sikh extremists from BC managed to get a bomb onto a plane that was headed for the Punjab region of India and ended up killing 326 people, which is kind of where the tension started between Canada and India. It's also important to mention that this conflict is not going to go away. Canada has one of the largest immigrant Indian populations, with approximately 2.6 of Canada's population just being from Indians from the Punjabi region, and 2 out of that 2.6 being Sikhs specifically. This actually is greater than the percent of population of Sikhs to other Indians within India itself.
Yes, it's definitely very relevant to Canadian diasporas and demographic politics. And India, on its part, admits all this, vehemently denied these allegations, with Prime Minister Narendra Modi rejecting them outright, completely denying. And the Indian government.
Sorry not to interrupt you, but when I heard that he denied these claims, from what I heard with the statement was he started off by saying these are completely baseless, unfounded claims. And then, the next sentence continued on, but also don't house terrorists in your country, which I think is just the worst way to deny doing something. See, I didn't take your football, but you shouldn't have left it there to begin with, because it was, right there to steal.
It definitely raises questions about the state of the relationships if accusations are being thrown back and forth, and there's continuous controversy about the geopolitical dynamics. And more personally, this impacts many Canadian students, as this diplomatic crisis has held significant implications for the potential of their safety, with Indian officials warning students coming to study in Canada with, I believe that you mentioned earlier, the exact words were watch out.
Yes, they were watch out. And that seems a little over exaggerated, but we don't want to diminish anybody's experiences, obviously.
Yeah, this impacts obviously the perception of Canada on the global stage.
Like, well, we've always been seen as the nice people. What? Yeah. Come on. Like, we got to hold up this reputation of opening doors and giving people free donuts.
I mean, now people may not want to study here. How are we going to offer them?
How will the universities coffee? Charge three times as much for every other student for international students? So I don't know. But it's also important to mention diplomatically, I believe you were telling me before the podcast that India kicked out something like 41, 42?
41 of 41 Canadian diplomats of the 62 diplomats we currently have
in
the country.
That seems like a lot of diplomats. Is like our relationship with India going to be severed that much without those diplomats?
I mean, this is very recent news. This came out this day of recording, October 3rd, 2023. Mm-hmm. So this escalation of the situation of demanding that Canadian diplomats are out of the country by October 10th, we now have a week to get
we have a week to
more
leave
than
to
two-thirds
vacate.
Of our diplomats out of India,
oh my
which
Lord.
Clearly makes bilateral communication or any sort of diplomacy much more difficult.
Yeah, a little bit. If you don't have diplomats over there to talk to them, it's a little hard to be diplomatic, I suppose. But it'll be interesting to see how our relationship with India develops. Obviously, this conflict will not be resolved in the next week, 2 weeks, maybe even months to years. And I think the true impacts of this will only be seen as years to come, given how India is rising in the political stage, especially with its relations to BRIC. Obviously, with Russia, Brazil, who are the other members again?
China and South Africa.
Oh, yeah, that's them. That a powerful group of countries coming together, and if we don't really ally with them, I mean, obviously we don't want to ally with Russia and China as much, but India always seemed like a very powerful ally, especially in the world of manufacturing.
It'll for sure impact how we're perceived on the global stage. I mean, even with the U.S. and the U.K. and our allies siding with us amidst these allegations and this scandal.
Yeah, I heard it was backed by our Five Eye program, which I think is just a bunch of Commonwealth nations coming together and being like...
For security, international security. Yeah. But yeah, even with allied nations defending us or backing our accusations, they are doing so waringly because it's
obviously no
quite
one wants
statement.
To sever their relationships with India just over... Obviously, this is no small matter, but at the same time, causing a political war is not what any country wants at this point in time.
No, they're also obviously with their own interests of diplomacy, as you mentioned with India, wary of what to say in support of Canada. But as we know, there's decades of allied relationships with the U.S. as our major... biggest trading partner.
It's our biggest trading partner again, right?
Mm-hmm. And right. I mean, UK-Canada relations, we could write a book about.
Didn't we used to belong to them or something? I don't know.
It's almost like we were part of the monarchy, but...
Oh, who knows? If only there was this coin that had a queen on it that we could tell if we used to belong... Oh, I don't know.
Definitely have major allies, which is helpful during this time of uncertainty, but... The speed at which they responded or supported of us was a little worrying because
they waited until we made the really accusations before putting their toe into the ring. They kind of wanted to put us at the forefront of this well, obviously because it happened on our territory.
Yeah.
So it's our accusation. They just were backing us instead of being the father figure of the movement itself. Overall, I think this will be a very interesting topic to see how it develops. Obviously, India growing as a powerhouse within the world. Canada as well growing with our population now hitting over 40 million. This conflict does not seem to have an easy end to it, again, with the expelling of diplomats and the warnings for citizens in the opposing countries. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in the years to come.
Definitely. That's probably going to be it for us today on this topic, but we'll make sure to keep you updated going forward.
Moving into our next topic, we're going to take a quick break for a short story about the U.S. debt crisis. Now, U.S. debt has been a contentious topic for a long time, and was actually in the early 2000s moving towards being net neutral for the United States. Of course, that was until 2008 when the stock market crashed and everything went to hell and everyone lost their homes. Obama and I believe the administration at the time bailed out the banks, which I think was the right move at the time, but did cause the debt to rise significantly, resulting in 2013 when the U.S. reached over 100% debt to GDP ratio, meaning they had more debt than their country produced in a single year.
Wow, that is definitely the statistic. Holy.
Well, I say this as dramatically, but currently it's at 122% for them.
Oh, so it just kept rising.
Yeah, that's... and it kept going. And obviously in Canada, we're not that much better. I think we're at 105%, which is obviously devastating in the long term. But currently, the United States has not been able to agree on a debt measure. The right and the left cannot come together for a bipartisan bill that will actually start lowering the debt. Instead, what they've been doing for the past is they've just been kicking the can down the line. They keep introducing new bills to just push it further and further away so that they don't have to deal with it. Recently, on September 30th, I think was the last bill to be passed, where Biden managed to get a bill through that only kept the government going for another 47 days, which I feel is a really short-term solution for, like, the most powerful government in the world.
It definitely was, as you say, like, well, it was cutting it close, because midnight on September 30th was when the United States was... rapidly approaching a government shutdown.
They all seem to be like 11th hours. They do not want to agree on a bill until they like have to.
No, well, we know the bipartisan cooperation in the U.S. is
all-time low,
all-time high of polarization.
Everybody's divided on everything.
Yeah, this agreement reflects the smallest degree of bipartisan cooperation. If, as you mentioned, in the 11th hour, they finally signed a budget agreement.
Well, and I think it's important for us Canadians to understand that this is not just a bill that affects them. If the United States government defaults, that affects the global economy. Hate them or love them, they are one of the largest economies in the world. And if they default, that does mean like doom for all neighboring countries, especially us, who have such close ties to the United States.
Especially with their trading.
Yeah, exactly.
The amount of trade that would be impacted with a government shutdown would be significant to our economy, no matter how short it was before they re-signed a new bill. But this, I believe Biden signed it around like 7, 8 p.m. at night. It was within hours of ruin, potentially. So this, as you mentioned, they have 37 days with the short-term funding. And then, once again, kicking the can down the line, we'll have to reface these.
I'm so glad issues. Our politicians know what they're doing and can keep a stable government running. It's just, oh, I'm so proud of them.
Definitely significant implications. And I mean, let's hope that once these 47 days are up, or maybe even before that,
they have
on the
new
46th
bill.
Day.
They've come together, they're holding hands, they've decided we have a plan.
Yes.
But until then, we will sit here in Canada and watch, hoping for the best. Some breaking news, actually, as we are recording this. Speaker McCarthy, who was one of the Speaker of the House this year, his election, again, was contentious. I think they had to vote to get him in something like 30 times.
It was several times. A long day of U.S. politics when he was elected.
But it seems like his right flank has had enough with... his appeasement of the Democrats, allegedly, and have decided to vote him out and try to get somebody a little bit more nice to their cause elected as Speaker of the House, given that the Republicans do still control it. But that may actually be to the detriment of the entire United States, as this was a man who has been in politics a long time and seemed like he was working bipartisanly to get the bill done to reduce spending of the United States government. So it'll be interesting to see who gets voted in as the new speaker, and if they can find the right bipartisanship to get the job done.
I agree. It's definitely been a contentious issue of McCarthy as speaker, and currently looking at different updates of live coverage, because as we are recording around 6 p.m. on October 3rd, he has just been ousted with a vote of 216 to 210.
Jeez.
And I believe that this will be just as it was a race to get a new speaker in Canada recently. This will be...
We got a new speaker in Canada?
Today.
Today?
Elected a new speaker.
Was this because of the controversy recently where we saluted a Nazi in the House of Parliament?
Once again, another scandal of Canadian politics.
Oh, recently. We're doing so good right now.
I mean, Liberal MP Greg Fergus has been elected as the new Speaker of the House of Commons. So let's hope under his mediation of
the, mediations,
of,
yeah.
of the House of Commons, we avoid any further government. I'd say humiliation is a good word. Yeah, other than any
scandals,
scale.
You know?
Yeah.
Moving on to our third topic for today, we're going to do a little discussion on the Russia-Ukraine situation. This has been a very long, ongoing situation, so we're not going to cover it for too long today. We did just want to give some updates as to what's been happening over the past few months, given that the media coverage has died off a little bit as to what's going on. So obviously the big thing that happened was, I believe, was it in June or August that the leader of the Wagner Group decided that they was going to overthrow the Kremlin and Putin himself and decided to take his private military and march on Russia. That was later talked down by, I believe, the president of Belarus, who offered the leader of the Wagner Group, his name's Wagner, he's the leader of the Wagner Group, they offered him safe haven in their country. But it recently came out in late August. Well, he was flying in a plane. It got shot down and he died. And I'll give you two guesses as to who orchestrated that.
It's like the classic push out the window. Oh, he tripped.
Man, such a clumsy guy. I always remember the leader of this insane militia orchestrated against Russia being a clumsy man.
Yeah, a little defenestration for you.
In terms of aid, though, the war has not stopped on the home front with Zelensky definitely coming not. Back recently. And as we mentioned previously, with the Nazi scandal in Canada, that was actually while Zelensky was here asking more funding from the Canadian government, which I believe we are providing. I think since 2022, we have provided an additional $8 billion in funding towards Ukraine, with the United States and its allies giving somewhere upward in the region of $75 billion as well.
In total for, I mean... primarily NATO.
Yes. I don't think China was giving much to support Ukraine in this situation.
They're also looking at Ukraine hoping for at some point a NATO membership, but that is well down the line. And
I think that'll be contentious to say the least, given there, I believe there is some law in the NATO charter preventing countries from joining while at a continuous war. And I don't know if exceptions will be made for this given their circumstances, but I think it is to prevent from dragging NATO into a war against a foreign country such as Russia.
Well, exactly, because one of their articles is when one country is at war of NATO, the rest are. So avoiding the membership for right now would avoid a larger scale war involving more members of NATO. And. Yeah.
Which that, would that probably end nuclear, and then the Fourth World War would be fought with sticks and stones.
So we're going to avoid that major topic of contention of NATO membership. Just give you a few updates of sort of the map and the terrain of the current Ukraine-Russia war.
Well, obviously Ukraine launched its counteroffensive. It's in, I believe, some Russian territory right now.
Has made its way into Russia in small town of Robotyn.
Oh, small town. If only it wasn't conflicted with violence.
Yes, I mean, this counteroffensive is obviously a huge gain for Ukraine. And as you can guess, Russia is continuing to maintain its offensive, not counteroffensive, its offensive to maintain a large part of Crimea, which was also annexed in 2014 for a little history there.
So overall, it seems like the situation, not much progress has been made, but Zelensky does continue to ask funding from the allied nations, and it does seem like Ukraine is gaining some ground with their counteroffensive.
That's all of our updates for the Russia-Ukraine war. Now for some positive news. Of course, there are always new innovations, new updates in the world of international affairs, and yet again... very recent, October 2nd, the WHO has backed a new malaria vaccine that is much cheaper and more available for those suffering from the disease. Well, it won't replace other measures or other solutions of treating malaria. It will grant a second malaria option, a second malaria vaccine option to millions of people around the world, with the UN agency approving, alongside the WHO, approving this vaccine and recommending it specifically for use in children. So this is very optimistic news and will definitely be positive for those in Global South countries dealing with high rates of malaria, and hopefully ensuring a more solid solution and cure for the disease. In other good news, on this day in history, in 1990, the treaty that officially united East and West Germany was stipulated. So October 3rd is a joyous day for Germans and those celebrating the Unity Day after the Cold War and the falling of the Berlin Wall in 1989.
Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, that is the show we have for you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I am your host, Sean, and Charlotte is next to me, and we hope you come back and join us for the future episodes. Have a great day.